We're holding on Ian Hay. I'm holding on Ian Hay on the base, a bit past, you know, about 2/3 of the way down the arm of the line against Chase. All right. Yesterday, we started talking about, the Mishnah had told us that Rabbi Eliezer, different gear, sorry, had said that it's fakest that a Suffolk is not allowed to marry a Badai, or a Badai a Suffolk, or a Suffolk another Suffolk. And then he listed among the cases of Suffolk, besides Shtuki and Asufi, he also mentioned a Kusi as being a Suffolk, which led us into the discussion, why would a Kusi be also to marry another Kusi, or a Kusi be also to marry a Yisrael? Which actually, when we talk about the rest of the sugya over here, different Rishonim have different explanations. Are we talking about the reasons that were the various reasons that we're going to be talking about why a Kusi, the problems with Kusim, does it mean why one Kusi is not allowed to marry another? Or is it why a Kusi should not be allowed to marry a regular Yisrael? Basically, it boils down to the question, are we considering that some of the Kusim themselves may be Mamzerim and others may not be? In which case, though, you have to ask the question, if they're Gerim, what's the problem? Versus, well, so the different explanations in that, among them that Rabbi Eliezer may hold, like Rabbi Yehuda, that we learned the other day, that he says a Ger is not allowed to marry a Mamzeret, or maybe the concept of Gemara itself, we mentioned yesterday, the concept of Ger Yashan, that a Ger whose ancestors were, or the person whose ancestors were this guy of many generations ago, and nobody remembers that he's descended from Gerim anymore, where therefore he's also to marry, he'd be also to marry a Mamzeret, because people are going to think that a young people are going to think that a Yisrael, that a regular Yisrael is going to be allowed to marry a Mamzeret. If you allow this guy whose ancestor was converted 15 generations ago or whatever, and nobody remembers that he's descended from Gerim anymore, if you allow him to marry a Mamzeret, people are going to think that a regular Yid can. So that factors into it also. That's the point. That's what we said yesterday. So that's all one angle on it. The other angle on it is that we're not talking so much about that the possibilities are kusim, we're getting more, the other angle on it is, which is how Tosfos takes it, for example, that we're dealing with the possibility that we don't just have, the kusim are not just descended all from these foreign colonists that some Chayrib imported. Some of them may actually be Jews who assimilated among them, who therefore are 100% Jews, and they for sure can't marry Mamzerim. So again, you have two different ways of looking at the upcoming sugya. Are we talking about the problem is we assume that all the kusim are indeed descended from are descended from these colonists by and large, and that if there are any Jews among them, they may be psulim themselves, they may be mamzerim themselves. In that case, the issue is really a ger with a mamzer. The pros and cons of that. Again, we would say according to that Rabbi Eliezer or Rabbi Lazar holds like Rabbi Yehuda in that regard. Or are we saying that a ger cannot marry a mamzeret? Or again, we could say even that he doesn't hold like Rabbi Yehuda, but rather that a ger whose ancestors converted many generations ago is not allowed to marry a mamzeret. Or we could take the viewpoint that we're talking about there may be Jews who are still kosher mixed in among them, and therefore one kosher can't marry another because you may have somebody who is an actual bona fide Jew end up marrying a mamzeret. So those are the two different approaches in the Rishonim of understanding the next sugya. So we're still trying to figure out what the basis of Rabbi Elazar's shita is, and also how it relates to the opinions of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel. So Ella,
now we said they're separate.
Well, that's what we're going to talk about. Ella, he also Robin, Amr of Chiba Abba, Amr of Rechen, and Ba'amilo, or others say Amr of Abba Bazavda, Amr of Chanina, Ba'amilo, or yet others say Amr of Yaakov Ba'idi, Amr of Yishuv and Levi. It must have been a very popular explanation. That Sholish Machloikas Vadava. There's actually a three-way Machloikas over here about the Kusim and about these Jews who assimilated among them. Specifically, the Pasuk mentions that after the Kusim learned about the Eishter and started believing in him, but they were still worshipping their various Getchkis as well, the Pasuk mentions that they made for themselves Koyanim. Vayasulahem Koyanei Bombs. What was the nature of those Koyanim? So we're going to have three different Machloikas in. So one way of looking at it, so again, that depends on the two different shittas, and they're showing them how we understand the sugya. If we're talking about the possibility is that the Jews who are assimilated among them are mamzerim, then that's the question. These Jews who are assimilated among them, are they mamzerim, or maybe are they kosher Jews? If we say that the issue is really among the kusim themselves, then the question is, then you're right. Then it's not really so relevant to know what the status of these Tainim were. But then it's just the Gemara, according to that, the Rashba, I think, learned, the Ritva, I think it is, learns this way. But the Gemara just did, had a Kabbalah, that given that the Pasuk mentions these Koyanei Bamos, there must have been something the matter with them, that they would go and join, that they would go and join and become part of the Kusi nation. What was it exactly? Were they kosher in Yochsin or were they not? And if they were possible in Yochsin, what was the nature of the psul? Were they mamzerim? Were they halalim? Etc. There's a three-way machlokes on the subject. Rabbi Shmuel sava kusim geirei arayis. Number one is Rabbi Shmuel holds that the kusim are geirei arayis, meaning, therefore, as we said yesterday, therefore that they're possible geirim because they only became geirim in the first place out of fear of the lions that were attacking them. They never really became sincere geirim in the first place.
But he says geirei arayis.
Geirei just means, well, they're not full-fledged geirim. They pretended to become. They went through a geirus process, but it didn't make them proper. It didn't make them proper geirim. The koyanim shenit mubraham koyanim psulim are you? And as far as these koyanim who assimilated among them, they were actually posel koyanim. What we mean by posel koyanim again itself is a discussion. Do we mean that they were actually mamzerim, or do we mean that they were just chalal? That again, that affects the understanding. Of that affects the understanding of the Soviet, what exactly the issue is with
it. It could be Kohanim, Jewish Kohanim?
We're talking about Jewish Kohanim, yeah. So they were Kohanim Sulim. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Vayasu Lahem Ksoisam Kohanim Bomis. As the Pasuk says, the course they made from Ksoisam. Ksoisam can have two meanings, as Gemara will say in a second. They made from Ksoisam, they made some of them to be Kohanim at their altars. To offer korbanos, but Amar Rav Babachana, Amar Rav Yechanan, it means minak kotzim shabam. It means from among the kotzim of the people, which in turn kotzim Rashi says has two possibilities. First of all, the word kotz means a thorn, so it can just mean the thorns, as in like the lower low class elements, the mamzerim or what have you, psulim basically. Or the other possibility, Rashi says kotzim can be related to the word muktzim. Mm-hmm. So either meaning like muktzim, like separated, like they would be. They would have been mamzerim, in other words, who would have been separated from the body of the Jewish people. In other words, what happened? Again, remember, Sabcheder took the Aseret HaShavatim into Golos, and then he repopulated the place with the Kutim. Not every single person from the Aseret HaShavatim was taken into Golos. Inevitably, there must have been some that managed to hide out or whatever. Among them, or among Jews who returned afterwards, whatever, there were some, there were these Ksoisam, which according to this opinion was saying Ksoisam means psulim among them. Who became, they joined with the Kosim, and since, after all, they first had Jewish brains compared to the Kosim, so the Kosim made them their Kohenim, they made them their leaders. But they were Psulim. So that's Miksoisam then means Minak Kosim Shabbat. And therefore, we would say, therefore, we passed the Kosim. Again, according to the different ways of understanding it, either we mean these people were mamzerim, therefore you never know with any given Kosi whether he's descended from the actual Kosim themselves who are geri arayis. So fine, let's say now he wants to convert properly, he'll be a regular geri, no problem. However, he might also be descended from these mamzerim, and in that case, he'll be a mamzer. That's one way of looking at it, and again, the other way of looking at it is we're not saying that these kohenim are mamzerim, we're just saying they're halalim, and therefore the fact that the kohenim are halalim is sort of incidental to the main point. The main point is that there are Jews among them, and again, if these Jews intermarried with the kohenim, again, we had the opinion yesterday that a goy or an eved who is the father of a child with a Jewish woman, the child is considered a mamzer, so right, you have a problem. That's opinion number one. Rabbi Akiva suffer, then opinion number two, Rabbi Akiva holds, Kusim Geirim Emesein. No, the Kusim are genuine Geirim. It's true, the Pasuk says they worshipped their other desires and whatnot, but still, there was a period of time when they became valid, when they became fully valid Geirim. Either what happened was originally they became proper Geirim, but then they relapsed and went back.
He was a descendant of Geirim,
but not from Kusim. No, he's a descendant of Sisera, who was from the original Knanim who lived in Eretz Yisrael. So he's saying they were geirei emes. At some point in history, they became true geirim. Either at the beginning, they became true geirim, and then afterwards they relapsed and then went back to avodah zarah, in which case they'd still be considered Jews who are sinning. Or maybe originally they only did this Geri Arayas, like we're saying, they had a few of the lions and they still worship their Geshkes, but afterwards they gave that up and then went to proper Yiddishkeit. Eventually, by the way, the Gemara tells us in Chulin that at times of a mayor, they found that they were worshiping an image of a dove and then they declared them outright goyim. This is all before that. This is all we're talking in the period before that, the several hundred years from, let's say, the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash until the mayor's times, which is 100 years after the Churban. We're talking what's the status of them during that time.
Afterwards,
they're going to Gemara. Although it's interesting, actually, the Nois HaKelim on the Shulchan Aruch discussed the issue: are they considered, or the Shacham Taz, I think it is, discussed, are they considered goyim gemurim lechumra only, or maybe even lekula? For example, would you be allowed to lend a kusi money with interest? Maybe yes, if you say they made them goyim gemurim, that's it. You can lend a goy at interest. On the other hand, maybe not. Maybe they only made them goyim gemurim lechumra. It's a machlokes, a poskim. Okay. So there's the kusim ugeira emes, the koyanim shenitmo behen koyanim kshirim are you. The koyanim who assimilated among the kusim are actually kosher koyanim. Shenemar, again the same topic, vayasalayim ktoisim koyanim omit. And on this one, v'amar rav rabachon amar v'yeshanon, that according to Rabbi Akiva, the meaning of miksoisim is not like it was according to Rabbi Yishmael, that it means mina kusim, from the psulim, but rather mina b'chirim shabam, it means from among the chosen one, aksinim, it says on the side. Miksoisim can also mean losh of kusim, like a leader. Therefore, it was among the leading, the kosher element of the Jewish people who became their kohen.
In
that case, yes. Based on that, you should be able to marry them, because one way or the other, either a kusi that you're going to marry nowadays, let's say, you know, 300 years later, either he's descended from the goyim themselves, and in that case, fine, he's becoming a ger, no problem. Remember, they were ger to emet, so they're genuine gerim. So therefore, either he's descended from the Gerim, no problem, or he's descended from these Jews who assimilated among them, Viker, no problem. The element, Neymar Ostrum, so we would have to say, why would Rabbi Akiva, according to Rabbi Akiva, why would he say that Kusim, apostle, to marry Jews, or maybe even to marry each other, because they had an odd way of doing things when it came to Yibum. They held that only a woman who became an almana from Erusin, only she has to do Yibum, or Chalitza, but a woman who was married to her husband and then her husband died does not have to. And how did they get this? My darshi. What are they darshin to get to such a conclusion? The pasuk says, "Lo'isia eshes hameta chutzal ishzar," that the wife of the dead man should not go out to marry an unrelated man. That's what he said. That's the concept of Yivam al-Shuk. They explained it. Hachti yasva chutza he lo'isia ishzar. Basically, what they did is they took the word chutza and instead of the way we translate it is "Lo'isia eshes hameta." She should not go hachutza, she should not go outside the family to marry a stranger. To marry a stranger. They understood hachutza as being an adjective describing the eshes hameis. Lo yisia eshes hameis hachutza. Right? Yeah, a little, yeah. Okay. So they explained, they understood the word hachutza to be an adjective about eshes hameis. Only eshes hameis hachutza, only the eshes hameis who was outside, namely who's not fully married yet, who's only done erusin, cannot go to ishtar. Hachti yasv chutza, only an eshes hameis who up until now has been chutza in the sense that she's been only she's not yet been in the reshus of the husband. Only she loytia the ishtar is not allowed to marry an ishtar.
Devil says
Ishtar,
the brother of the
mess,
is not an
Ishtar. That's the point. Yavama Yavarela. The Yavama that the Yavama has to marry.
Anything
but Ishtar. So obviously, Ishtar means anybody other than the brother, yes. But anyway, yes. Aval Hachdala Yasva Chutza, but a woman who was not Yasva Chutza, who was already inside the house with her husband, Le'itiel Ishtar, she could marry anybody she wanted. So, in other words, according to them, you had a case of a Yavama who winds up marrying outside of the family when really Lahalacha she's not allowed to. So what's the problem with that, you would argue? Rabbi Akiva l'tamei, and Rabbi Akiva is going according to his svara, Dama yesh mamze machayve lavin. He said, as we've had many times already, that even a chayve lavin produced the mamzer. A yivama l'shuk is a chayve lavin, so the public says loisia. Therefore, according to him, the child permitted to be mamzer. So there you go, then. The problem is that among the kusim, there are mamzerim. So you're back to the issue. Doesn't matter the fact, fine. They're kosher and gave. No, we're talking about this woman did not do chalitza.
But by the
kusim, they didn't. That's the point. No, if she was an arusa, they'd make her do yibum or chalitza. But if she was a nesua, they wouldn't. They'd just allow her to go freely, marry whoever she wants. Okay, you know. So anyway, the point is, fine, they're gave. fine, the Jews among them are kosher to Jews. But ultimately, you end up having Mamzeret, according to Rabbi Akiva's opinion, among them. Therefore, no good. Now we have a third opinion, the Yesh Oimrim. Then the Braita continues that as a third opinion, Yesh Oimrim. The reason you can't marry Kostim, or the reason Kostim may not be able to marry each other, depending on the different ways you understand the Sugya, Lepisha Ein B'Kiyin B'Dukei Mitzvah. Because the Kostim are not knowledgeable in the fine details of the Mitzvah. Now, how does that affect the Yochsin? We'll talk about it in a few lines. But first we're going to interject and explain what that means. First of all, man yesh oimrim. Who is this yesh oimrim? Usually, yesh oimrim would usually the Gemara tells us at the end of Purim that yesh oimrim means Rav Nosson, but here not. Amar of Idi Ba'Oven, Rav Eliezer. That's Rav Eliezer from the Braita that we're going to quote, or which may also be the same as Rav Eliezer from our Mishnah. Again, we've had throughout the study of the different Gersoras, whether it's Eliezer or Eliezer. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braita, Masas Kusi Muteres. The masa that was baked by a kusi is mutter, not just in the sense mutter that it's not chometz, but mutter is, well, yeah, the two things. Number one, it's mutter. There's no problem of chometz in it. And wait, v'adam yotzeh yidei chevasa b'pesach, and you can be yotzeh the mitzvah of eating masa with it, because now Rashi points out the Gemara tells us in Pesachim that if you have masa that was baked by a goy, you cannot use it for masa's mitzvah because you didn't do it for shame masa's mitzvah, but a kusi. A kusi knows enough about mitzvahs to know that there's a mitzvah of that there's a mitzvah of eating matzah, and that ushmartem as a matzah, as the pasuk says, that you have to guard the matzahs in the sense that you have to bake them. You have to bake them the same matzah mitzvah. So they know that. Therefore, you can eat them.
It's not only about knowing; it's about having.
It's about doing. But they know it has. In other words, they know it has to be done. Wait. Okay. The Tosfos points out a couple of things over here. A couple of details over here. First of all, there is an expression, actually, it's in Pirkei Avot Eliezer, so from the same Rabbi Eliezer that we're talking about, that says you're not allowed to eat pap kusi, and if you do, it's as if you're eating chazer flesh. So Tosfos answers that there's a difference whether the kusi makes the bread in his own house, versus here you're talking about that a kusi comes to a Jew's house and bakes Jew's matzah bakery and bakes matzah over there. That we're saying, that wouldn't be considered pap kusi.
That's what
Tosfos is pointing out.
Even if he's worshipping over the
Zara? No, we're not, forget about it, we're not worshipping over the Zara. We're assuming that these are the real kusim during the hundreds of years when we consider that they're gerei emes. But number two, Tosfos points out, when we say Adam Yosef Yedei Chavasei, you would have to have, now the Kusim do not believe in the concept of Lifnei Iver, because they understand the pasuk literally. You don't put a stumbling block in front of a blind person. They don't understand that the way Torah Shabbat Peh tells us, which is that you're not allowed to cause another Yid to do an Avera. Therefore, Tosfos points out, you do have a caveat over here. It has to be that this Kusi himself is using this matzah for the mitzvah by the Seder.
Because
otherwise, he might be giving it to you. He may not have done it l'shem matzah mitzvah. So what? He won't care that you won't be yotzeh mitzvah, because as long as he himself does the mitzvah, he doesn't care. Mashen can, if he himself is using it for the mitzvah, then that's what Rabbi Eliezer said. That's what the Chachamim are saying, that you can. However, Rabbi Eliezer says it's also l'fi she'en b'kiyim b'dikduki mitzvah, because they're not knowledgeable in the precise details of the mitzvah, so they won't know to be sure. No, well, they won't know, in other words, to make sure that the dough doesn't become chomet. They won't know the actual details of when it's considered chomet. So you see from that, therefore, the yesh omrim that says that when it comes to marrying kusim, that you can't because there ain't in bikin vittit to kibitzis. That's exactly what Rabbi Eliezer is saying in the case of Masa. Therefore, that yesh omrim must be Rabbi Eliezer. And the Braita continues in connection with Masa, Rav Shimon Gam Liyoloma, Kol Mitzvah Shech Zukubah Kusim, any mitzvah that the Kusim held on to, Habe Medaktikun Bab Yosem Yisrael. They're much more precise with it than regular Yisraelim. Meaning,
not Rav Eliezer.
No, not Rav Eliezer. In other words, Rav Shimon, it actually sounds like Rav Shimon Gam Liyoloma is saying basically the same thing as the Tanakhama. He seems to be saying that you can eat the Kusim Masa, no problem. The Gemara in Chulin has a whole sugya on this concept of what exactly is and isn't allowed with the Kusim. It extends over like two or three blocks near the beginning of Chulin. And the Gemara explains over there, basically the Nafka Minna is, are we talking about, what if you have a mitzvah that it doesn't say explicitly in the Torah? Usually the Kusim only believes in Torah Shabbat Sam. But what if you have a mitzvah that doesn't explicitly say in the Torah, but for whatever reason the Kusim glommed onto it and kept it? According to the Tanakhama, no good, it's not written in the Torah. According to Rav Shimon Gamliel, the fact that they were maksik in it, that's good enough.
Even though,
yeah. So anyway, returning to our case over here, returning to our business over here about marrying Kuzim, the Elohocha Mai Ein Bekiyin. So what do we mean over here when the Yesh Omim are saying you can't marry Kuzim because they're not Baki? What exactly is the problem? It means Lefishen Bekiyin, Bitaras Kedushin Begerishin. It means they're not expert in the dinim of Kedushin and Gerishin, according to Rabbi Yezer. So therefore, for example, a woman gets divorced. Well, they won't necessarily do a get, which is valid off the Torah. Or you may have a case where a woman is suffix mekudeshes and they won't know to they'll think it's not considered a valid condition at all, and therefore they won't arrange for a get, et cetera, et cetera. Therefore, again, you wind up with mamzerim among them. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Baravur. So now more reasons why we should say that kusim are also to intermarry with Jews. So Rav Nachman says in the name of Rav Baravur, mamzer me'achosel or mamzer me'eshes och nitzarvo behen. Because there was a mamzer from a man who had relations, a kusi man who had relations with his sister, and a mamzer from a kusi who married his brother's wife, this Abraham got mixed in among them. Or maybe not even necessarily a kusi, maybe Jews who did these things got mixed in among them. Whatever. The point is, now there's a mamzer. The question is, my kamashkal. And so what's Rav Nachman coming to tell us? The fact that yesh mamzer mechayvik krusis. He wants to tell us, according to the opinion, that mamzer, that chayvik krusis produce a mamzer, which is the opinion of Shimon HaTimni, as opposed to Rabbi Yeshua, where we said it's only chayvik krusis based in. So the two examples he mentioned are only karis. In that case, nisni chada. Why does he have to mention both of them? As long as there's a case of a man with a sister, or a man of a case with his brother's wife, Then either way you have a mamzer. You don't need both of them. You don't need to say that both of them.
What do you mean both? Krisis and
both of them are cases of karis. It's not like one is karis and one is mitzvah based.
Right.
So why does he need to mention both of them? The answer is Yitaka doesn't. It so happened that there were these two cases of mamzerim that happened among the kusim, and therefore, so Rav Nachman is not just trying to tell us the halacha; he's trying to tell us the fact. The fact is that these two cases happen among them.
What does it show?
It shows that there are mamzerim among them. No, it just shows that there are mamzerim. Again, even if there was one, it would be enough because all of them are topic mamzerim now. But the two doesn't really add anything. It's just ma'aseh shayach hachayah. It so happened that that's right. The Rava says a different answer. Eved b'shifcha nisavu b'hen. There was an eved and a shifcha mixed in among them. An eved married a kusi's daughter. A shifcha married a kusi. And again, you don't know which family that is. Again, the question is, Isura Mishum Mai? So after all, which one creates the Issa? Mishum Shifcha. After all, it's only the Shifcha that creates the problem, because if an Eved marries even a Bat Yisrael, or in this case, we assume the Kusim are Gere Emes and a Ger, the child is not considered an Eved. He doesn't go after the father. The Avodim don't have any Yisrael. So Nisni Chada. So again, a Shifcha would be the problem. Again, Nisni Chada. All he has to say is that a Shifcha was mixed in among them. Who cares whether an Eved was mixed in?
So a shifcha marries an eved child.
No, a shifcha marries anybody. A shifcha marries a regular ben yisrael. Well, not married. There's no kedushin. They're not shayach at all. But yeah, the child is a shifcha. The child is an eved. Whatever. Yeah. And again, the answer is nice to shayach kachoya. Again, Rav is telling us the fact. There was a shifcha, which is important for purposes of halacha. By the way, there was also an eved. So for all these reasons, kusim cannot marry the Jews. And again, maybe also the Gemara has been talking about over here according to the different possibilities. Maybe the Gemara has also been talking about why one kusi cannot marry another, because again, one of them might be descended from the mamzer and another one not. One might be descended from the shifcha and another one not, etc. Mishnah says, "Hanoisa isha kehen." If somebody marries a woman who's the daughter of a kohen,
tzarich lived the kachar.
Well, that's a kohen. It means a bat kohen. Now, who are we talking about is coming to marry over here? Tosfos says that we're talking about a kohen who wants to marry a bat kohen. And Tosfos also explains that the issue really is you're checking basically for halolos. You're checking whether there's any problem of halolos in her ancestry. The Rambam, on the other hand, holds it's not only a kohen. The Rambam holds even a Yisrael who wants to marry a bas kohen. In which case, the issue is not so much halalos, because a Yisrael can marry a halala and their children will be kosher anyway. The issue is more you're looking for issues in mamzeros, or shifchos, or other cases of psulei kahal. And then there are Rishonim who talk about that maybe both, actually. Maybe you're primarily checking for halalos, but incidentally, while you're doing that, you're also checking for mamzeros.
When Yisrael marries a halal, the children
will be kosher. Will be kosher the kohen, yeah. Well, yeah, the children, yeah. We'll learn that later on Ein Zayin and Aleph, when we get into the whole topic. We talked about it briefly, but we're going to have a whole sugya about it tomorrow and the next day, yeah.
But a chal who marries a...
So a chalal who marries a bat Yisrael, that's the machlokes of the story of Yehuda and the Chachamim. But a chalala marries a Yisrael, for sure the children are clean. So anyway, so this guy is marrying an Isha Kohenet. Again, either we mean a Kohen marrying a Kohenet, or we mean even a Levi or Yisrael marrying a Kohenet, according to the different opinions. Tzorech libde kachareya, arba imoris chen shmoina. He has to investigate, going back in her family tree, four mothers, which amounts to eight. Meaning, in other words, he has to check from her father's side and from her mother's side. Namely, he has to check as follows. Ima, her mother, the Aim Ima, and her mother's mother, the Aim Avi Ima, and her mother's father's mother, so her mother's paternal grandmother, the Ima and her mother, the Aim Avia, and her father's mother, the Ima, because her father and mother don't come to the Ima, the Aim Avia, the Ima, and her mother, the Aim Avia, the Ima, the Aim Avia Via, the Ima. Yes,
the Ima and her mother.
Here's actually since this is Paskin Mahalacha, so here's a useful diagram in this edition of Rambam to show what are the eight women. Here's the woman he wants to marry. So he needs to check her mother, then he needs to check her two grandmothers. Her father's mother and her mother's mother, and then you have the grayed out ones we'll ignore for the moment. We'll deal with them soon. So then you also have to check most of the women. So again, the grayed out ones we're saying you don't necessarily have to check with them when you're dealing with a cohen. You have to check back. What is it? Some of them two generations, some of them three generations, basically. Well, no, three or four generations, respectively. The most you have to check back is four generations from the woman. Here's the woman herself. One, two, three, four. The furthest back you need to check are four generations, her father's father's mother's mother, and her mother's father's mother's mother.
Check the what?
You have to check. We'll see. So that's the thing. Are we talking? That's the machlokes we're showing him that I was talking about. Are we checking for issues of halalos? Or are we checking for issues of mamzerus or nesinus or any of those other psulim? Or maybe both. Maybe we're primarily checking for halalos, but as long as we're doing that, we have to check for mamzerus as well. That's affected by the whole machlokas, whether we're talking about over here a kohen marrying a bas kohen, or whether you're talking about a yisrael marrying a bas kohen.
How would you know that they halalim or mamzerus?
You would have to find records, or you would have to bring edim. Actually, the shit of Enoj and Lamit says an interesting thing. He says, why don't you have to go back any further? He says, because four generations, practically speaking, is about the maximum you can that people will still remember. Well, any further back than that, it will be hard to find people who remember.
Really?
Okay. If the woman is a Bas Levi or a Bas Yisrael, where there tend to be more psulim among them because they're not necessarily as careful with who they marry as Kohenim, then you have to add one more. What we mean by one more, we'll talk about in the Gemara. Then here's the Mishnah. Ein Bodkin, you do not have to check Loimina Mizbeach Olamayla, not anything beyond the Mizbeach, meaning if you find, for example, so again, you start checking all these generations of mothers. You find, let's say, that her father or her grandfather or what have you was a Kohen who served in the Beit Hamikdash. You don't have to check any further. You don't have to check his mother or his grandmother or what have you, because, as the Gemara will say, they wouldn't have allowed him to serve unless the Sanhedrin checked out and found that he was Kosher. Tosfos and Amud Beis, by the way, has an interesting shita on this. We don't just mean, obviously, if it was a Kohen who was doing avodas that are reserved specifically for Kohenim, then of course there's no chiddush in it, if let's say he was sprinkling the blood or whatnot. The chiddush is, Tosfos says, even let's say, for example, all you know is that he shechted a korban, or he stripped off the skin from the korban. Now, those are things that are allowed to be done by Zorin. In principle, those don't have to be done by Kohenim at all. Nevertheless, that's good enough, Tosfos says, because they still, even though technically anybody could do them, even a Zor and even a Psul Yichus, Tosfos explained that L'Hachchila they would only allow Miyuchasim. Okay, they don't have to necessarily be Koyim, a Zor can do the Shchita, but L'Hachchila they would make sure that only Miyuchasim would do it. So therefore, if you find that this woman's grandfather, let's say, once shechted a korban at this mikdash, that's good enough evidence to say that he was a Miyuchas.
Okay.
Not all Rishonim agree with that. Others say that no, we're talking about that he did avodah, the actual kind of avodah that a kohen does. Anyway.
You know any references he used to shout in the Beit HaMikdash?
Come on.
Shaking what? How could
you make it? Yeah. We'll see on Amud Beis. We'll talk about whether you have to do this checking nowadays. Wait, we'll get there. Okay, so you don't have to check min ha-mizbeach olamayla, v'lo min ha-duchan olamayla. You also do not check beyond the duchan. Now, we use duchan in the sense like when a kohen duchan. That's not what it means over here. Rashi says it means the Levim would stand on the duchan, on the platform in the Beit Mikdash, to sing when the korbanos are being brought. Same thing, only Levim miyuchasim could do that. V'lo min ha-sanhedrin olamayla. You don't have to check anything beyond the Sanhedrin. Again, if one of this woman's ancestors served in the Sanhedrin, and it doesn't matter, it doesn't have to be a big Sanhedrin of 71, it can even be one of the smaller Sanhedrins of 23 members. Either way, they would only allow kosher yichus to serve in them. So again, therefore, you don't have to check any further back in that branch of the family tree. Also, anybody who has a chazaka that his ancestors were among the shoytrim, among the leaders of the community, which we'll see on Amud Beis what these shoytrim harabim are, the gavoy tzedaka, or if they were gavoy tzedaka, which the Gemara will say on Amud Beis, also they're responsible sometimes for forcing people to give tzedaka. Also, Masi and Lekohona, they can also marry their daughters to Kohenim, and so if Livdek Acharen, you don't have to check any further on them, because as the Gemara will say, if there was any psul yichus on them, everybody will know about it. Rabbi Yossi says also, here's another example where you don't have to check any further back. If you have somebody whose name was written, was signed in the registers of Yeshana, which actually says is the name of a city, Shal Tzipori, meaning near Tzipori, Erchi means like the community records, sort of, the records. No, Yeshana is a town near Tzipori. The point is, the people over there were very careful that, so Rashi learns that they would, even though technically, as we'll learn on Amud Beis, Dayanim, Virginia Mominus, don't have to be Toshid of Yichud, they can be Psula Yichud. In this place, in Yeshana, they were particularly careful that only Psula Yichud are enrolled on the list of people who are eligible to be Dayanim. So therefore, if you have the, only Ksheda Yichud, only Miyuchasim, yeah. Are eligible to be on this register of people who are kosher to be Dayanim in the town. Therefore, if you find his name on those registers of Yeshana near Tzipori, then you know that in the Erchi, again, Erchi is sort of related to the word archive, so like in the city archive, we have over here in our Gemara, we have the word Eid, which implies not we're talking about city archive, but rather we're talking about we find his name signed as an Eid on a document. According to that explanation, it would be that they were careful that only Ksheva Yichud, only Yuchasim, would be able to sign as Aid. Rashi doesn't have the word Aid in his Girsa, which means he's talking about Dayanim, that the people who were enrolled on the list as eligible to be Dayanim.
So that implies that people who were not here in Yeshana were not as careful, and they could have been Psula Yichud?
Yes. Now, it's Sanhedrin, not again, for the Sanhedrin of 71 or 23, who can judge Dinir Fashas, no. And will learn on the base that they have to be Ksheva. But in Yeshana, they were careful for all of them.
That's the only town they were careful for?
Apparently, well, maybe Rabbi Yossi himself is from Tzipori, so maybe that's the only, that's the town he could testify on. The Me'iri, by the way, has a different explanation of it. He says Yeshana has its regular meaning of old, meaning in other words, in olden times, they were careful in Tzipori, the local Jewish government over there was very careful on these things. In later times, maybe after the Churban, maybe after whatever it was, exactly things changed, and he can't rely on it anymore. Anyway. Also, somebody who is enrolled in the list of soldiers, or the list of people who take turns in the army of the king, which we'll explain on the base, means the armies of David HaMelech. If you find somebody's name in those lists, then you know, maybe not even David HaMelech, maybe more generally the kings of the Jewish people, whatever, we'll talk about it on the base, but then also their Ksheri Yichus, because again, David would only have Ksheri Yichus in his army. So the Gemara starts off, my shnub and noshi bakinin, and why is it we're saying we only have to investigate the yichus of the women in the family, the eight women or whatever? My shnub and gabri, loy bodku, why is it we don't have to check the yichus of the men? The reason is because there's a difference in how men and women argue. Noshi, dechi mintsu bahadi adodi, when women get into an argument, barayah su de mintsu. What do they argue about? One says to the other one, not your apostle as in your mamzeres or what have you, but you, what's wrong with you, you were mazana. You yourself are a zayna. You yourself did whatever. In Issa, Ikamilsa, so therefore, if one of them herself is a mamzeres in the sinner or what have you, lo is like kolo. There's no kolo to it. Nobody knows about it because they themselves don't tend to talk about it. They're not as familiar with yuchsin themselves and whatever. Gavri. No, not they. No, not. In other words, if one woman wants to insult another one in the course of an argument, she's not going to say, "How dare you argue with me, you mamzeres? How dare you argue with me?" To put it in popular terms, you slut. You know that, yeah.
So what is she going to say?
Garnish. I mean, she'll argue back. I'm not. You are. Whatever. But the point is, you know, they're
two women who wouldn't insult themselves
with mamzer. With mamzer, it's not so much. Whereas when men argue with each other, they argue about yuchsin. One will say to the other, "Are you talking, you mamzer? You're arguing with me?" Yeah. If indeed there is anything over there, if there is indeed any soul of yuchsin, kola. It's like kola. So then there'll be a kola. There'll be a curl, so therefore you don't have to check it out. There's enough of a curl that you don't need actual aiders or actual documentary evidence. Yeah.
We'll have to be checked on the one.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Next question. The Ihi Nami Tibruk Baby Day. Why are we saying that
without a soul, we all have to touch.
That's what we're talking about on Omid Beis, whether people have a Cheskes Kashrus. Right now we're assuming that they don't. We'll talk about on Omid Beis what exactly the scenario is that our Mishnah is talking about. Wait. Meanwhile, though, let's ask something else. We're saying that the husband has to check out the wife's yichus before he can marry her. Why not the other way around? He not be subject baby today. Why shouldn't she have to check out his yichus? No. Why shouldn't she have to go and investigate? Fine, not him, but his mother, his mother's mother, etc. What if 3 generations back there was mamzerus in the family? You can't assume that 3 generations later a guy who argues with him is going to know that he's descended from mamzerus and bring it up. Besides which, also, you know, no, you know, it, just because, I mean, so fine, if there's an argument, but what if there isn't an argument? What if it so happens he never got it into an argument? You still might need, on the face of it, you should still need to check out. The answer is, Messiah Leila Rav. This fact that we're saying that you don't have to supports what Rav says. The Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, we had this the other day, like, who's Ruk Shadr, so not so absolute. Kosher women, meaning Bnoi Kohanim, do not have an issur of marrying Sulim, meaning Sulim Kohanim. So we know a Kohen cannot marry a Chalala, for example, but the reverse is not true. A Kohenet, a Bas Kohen, has no issur to marry a Chalala. So therefore, if we're talking about over here, a Bas Kohen who is intending to marry a Chalala, she doesn't need to check his vehicle. It's okay, so he's a Chalala, big deal. Which, by the way, this
children would not be following.
Right. No. The children will be Chalala, according to the Chamim, according to the Sefer of Yehuda, they won't be.
So why shouldn't be checked?
Because she has no issue. She's allowed to. She can marry a halal. Fine, the children will be halal. She's still allowed to. There's no issue on it. Now, this point is one of the things that Tosfos brings up to say that it must be that we're checking.
Both directions, except it's a halal.
What?
You were saying she's allowed to marry a halal.
Yeah.
And he would, if he's an Israeli, would be allowed to marry a halal.
Fine, but the point, but that's the right, okay, so that's the thing, 1 second. So that's, we said, Rashi is talking about the idea that all the checking we're doing over here is because of Mamzeres. This part of the Gemara is one of the things Tosfos brings up. If it's a matter of Mamzeres, she has an equal issue to marry a Mamzeres. Yes, therefore, that is why Tosfos learns that the issue we're dealing with is Kalol.
Oh.
Fine, but that's also why Tosfos learns that we're talking about a Kohen who's coming to marry a Bas Kohen,
yeah,
or Bas Levi or Bas Yisrael. Again, the other Rishonim. Yes. There are other Rishonim, the Ramban, for example, who learn that we're talking, the Ramban, for example, that say we're talking about even a Yisrael who's coming to marry a Bas Kohen.
Because
you still, even though he's allowed to, fine, but you still want to know what's going to be. You still want to know what's going to be the status of the, it's not that you want to know what's the status of the children, because, no. Again, we're going to talk about Anamad Beis. We're going to talk about Anamad Beis that we're dealing with a case where already a Sul has been brought, there may be, one second. Let me rephrase that. Again, according to Tosfos, we're talking about a Kohen. So therefore, obviously, he needs to check for Halal. There are other Rishonim who learn that actually it's both. We're checking for Halal as well as for Mamzeres. So if the Kohen marrying a Bas Kohen or Bas Levi or Bas Yisrael, he needs to check for both, Halal and Mamzeres. If or actually the Bas Levi or Bas Yisrael, really Halal is not relevant, but whatever. If it's a, if, but also they have to check for Mamzeres. Now, the Gemara can still be asking why she doesn't have to check, because according to those who are showing him, so according to Tosfos, there's no issue. So again, so if we go according to Rashi that says that the problem is Mamzerus, then Tosfos asks the question, why shouldn't she have to check now?
Right, exactly.
That's why Tosfos says halal. So they answer, they check. And for Rashi, they say that really, Midoraisa, we shouldn't have a reason to check at all. Because after all, we said the other day that Midoraisa, a Sopik Mamzer, is allowed to marry into the Jewish people. There's only a Vada Mamzer.
Yes.
It's only the Chachamim made Mila also be Yotzin. But fine, they didn't want to have to make it that she has to check. That's the point. We're speaking to Rabbanim, this whole concept of the beginning. That's the thing. In other words, according to Rashi, the Chachamim imposed on a man when he's going to marry a woman, again, whether we're talking Koyin or Yisrael, the case may be that he should check for any possible issues among them. I'm a deraiser, he should be allowed to marry, but Midrabanan, my law is
not.
But the Chachamim did, since the whole thing is only Midrabanan, then the Chachamim did not impose it on her.
Why?
That's okay, because because
they imposed it on
him, but not on her. Yeah.
Why? What's the point? She could just be a mamzeret.
But she's only a Sopik mamzer and Midoraita,
so
that's fine.
A Sopik mamzer.
Fine. But again, Midoraita, Midrabanan.
No,
okay. Yeah.
So if he's a Sopik and she's a Sopik, why just one has to be checked and why not the other?
Okay. I don't know.
That's how a number of Mephoshim explain Rashi.
Anyway, according to Tosfos, you're not checking for Mamzeret at all. You're only checking for Chalolus. So therefore, it's easy to understand why she doesn't have to check out, because she's allowed to marry a Chalol. And according to the Rishonim that say that it's both, according to the Ramban and others, that say it's both, you're checking for Chalolus, and along that with that, you're checking for Mamzeret. The point is, again, that since... But again, the point is, since primarily it's Chalolus, and only while you're doing that, also, by the way, look for Mamzeret, then therefore, again, Chalolus only applies, the issue of Chalolus only applies to me.
It's primarily Chalolus, but
okay.
It's still Mamzeret.
Fine, but again, the Chachamim are not going to impose on it, given that they're whole... Okay. Hey, anyway. Okay. I mean, there is also the idea. I mean, generally speaking, people have a chest of cash. So, yeah.
Okay. Then you shouldn't have to check it off.
But okay, again, my law is to be open. So our Mishnah had said you have to check four mothers, which is eight, meaning you have to check four on each side, basically. So you have eight total. Rav Adaba Ava is saying four, which are 12. He says you have to go a whole other generation back. You're not just four generations, but five generations. Well, in other words, here, in the diagram over here, you have eight. If you figure then that, again, leaving aside the grayed out ones, if you have one more, if you're going to have to check out one further generation back, then you're going to have another four.
So that's 14, not 12.
No. You have eight over here so far. So adding another four.
You have
eight, leaving aside the grayed out ones.
You have nine, don't you?
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. This one's grayed out, this one's grayed out. Because those only apply to Levium. Those only apply to Levium in Israel.
Okay.
So when you marry Levium in Israel. So another generation, then you'll end up with 12. Each side you have to check one mother further. Each side you have to check one mother further back.
So you have
four sides. One, two. What is it? One, two, three. One, two, three, four. Somewhere over here, yeah, one, two, three, four, because on the father's side, you're going necessarily one generation further back, because the father, we said, you don't have to check.
Right.
So each of those four, if you check her mother, then you have another four. The Masnissa Tana, Braisa teaches, Daladimah is Shem Sheshet, right? That's actually four to 16. You have to go yet back to another generation.
Who teaches that?
Braisa. So, Bishleim a little bit Adaba Ava. So, okay, I can understand a point of Adaba Ava, Mukim Lob Leviu, or Vati 12. He can say that the 12 that he says is not contradicting our Mishnah, because our Mishnah said that in the case where Koyin is marrying a Leviu or a Vati 12, you have to add one more. So, one more means one from each of the four top level ones that we have. Therefore, you wind up with 12. El Masnissa name of Sligur, but the Braisa, do we necessarily have to say that it's arguing with the Mishnah? And the answer is Loid, my Oid Achas, Zug Achas. No, because when the Mishnah means that you have to add one more, it may mean one pair more, meaning two mothers, meaning the grandmothers, meaning you have to check out the grandmothers of each of these four, and therefore you wind up with 16. The Rambam, by the way, explains that you have that actually with a Levi or a Yisraelis, you only need 10, meaning, in other words, because you have the eight that we said plus the two that are grayed out over here. The father's mother's mother and the mother's mother's mother. How does the Rambam get 10 when the Gemara here is saying 12 or 16? So they talk about the Vilna Gaon talks about the Rambam may have had a different girsa over here in the Gemara that comes out with 10. Which two he adds? I mean, what they show here in the diagram is one possibility. How the Mekeves HaMishnah explains who the two are that you add. The Prisha and Tur has a different explanation of it. He said you add them both on the father's side, on the mother's side, whatever. Anyway, I'm going to be Hodamirad. Do Divrei Reb Meir. All this that was saying that in the Mishnah that you have to do this whole checking of 8 or 12 or whatever it is, the ancestors back, is according to the Meir. But the Chachamim say all families have a cheskes kasher. Therefore, you don't need to check.
But Meir, he doesn't say it there.
Okay. So the question is, Eli, is that so? But Rav Chama Baguria says also in the name of Rav. So Rav Yehuda said what he said in the name of Rav. Rav Chama Baguria is also saying in the name of Rav. Mishnah Seinu Kshetoda Olav Irer. That our Mishnah is talking about a case where that even our Mishnah is saying you don't need B'dikah, unless there was an error, unless there was an objection, meaning, so what kind of objection? Rashi says it means that Adim came and said, we don't know specifically that there's a psul in this family, but there's a shemet psul. We can give Adus that there's some semblance of a psul in this family. We don't know the details of what it is, but there is something, and therefore it needs to be checked out. The Rambam learns differently. The Rambam learns that that corollary error means that you actually have that the Adim come and say that there's an actual known mamzer or cholol or eved or whatever in the family. So anyway, so according to the Chama Baguria, the Mishnah is only talking about when there's an error. So what are you telling me then that the Mishnah is according to the Meir that regardless whether there's an error or not, you need B'dikka? And so it's okay, manda masni hole, masni hole. Fine, there are two different understandings of what Rav said. Rav Yehuda's understanding is that Rav was saying that our Mishnah is saying you always have to do the B'dikka, and the Chachamim are saying you don't have to, unless maybe there was an error. And Rav Chama Baguria is saying that no, the Mishnah itself is only saying you have to if there was an error. Ikadamri, or another version of the discussion, is Amr Rav Yehuda Amr Rav Zudivir a mayor of a Chachamim and Kol Mishpachas B'cheskes Kasher saying this. Again, according to the second version of Yehuda is saying the same thing, that our Mishnah is according to the mayor, but the Chachamim disagree. And then, according to the second version, Amar Chama Baguria Amar Rav, Im Kora Olav Arar, if there is an objection raised, an error on the Yichus, Tzarech Livdik Acharei, then you need to check out, even according to the Rabbanan. So according to that version, Rav Chama Baguria is not disagreeing with Rav Yehuda. They're both saying complementary things in the name of Rav. Or, in other words, so therefore, it would come out, according to
two versions
of what Rav Chama Baguria said. We pass in according to the second version, we usually do in the Gemara, and therefore it comes out. In other words, the final halacha is that when you have a Kohen marrying a Bas Kohen, or again, according to the other Rishonim, maybe even a Yisrael or a Levi, marrying a Bas Kohen or Bas Levi or Bas Yisrael, whatever it is, you don't have to check out. You don't have to check out the Yosin. If there's an error, then you need to. Then you need to. And that is why nowadays, when a Kohen gets married, you don't see him investigating his Talos family tree. But there's usually no error, yeah. The Mishnah said, "Ein bodkin min hamizbeach lemaila," that you do not check any further back from a kohen who
still applies today. I mean, you think that in those times it's okay, but today how could there be an error? I mean, nobody knows.
Sometimes you do. I mean, you could still have, you could still have that there was a mamzer. Yeah. I mean, you have cases of mamzeris nowadays, unfortunately. So you can have a mamzer pretended to not be and married into a family, and later on, you know, whatever. So, yeah. So eventually, if it gets forgotten after many generations, we said, Mishpacha Shemitma Nitma. But as long as it's known, yeah. So, Ein Bodkin Min HaMizbeach LeMaila, why you don't check any further back than a Kohen who served on the Mizbeach, and again, according to Tosfos, not even necessarily on the Mizbeach, but he did any Avodah in the Mishmikdash. My timer, why is that? He lobbed about Kur, because they hadn't checked him out. Well, have a masculine, they would not have allowed him to go up there and serve. You also don't have to check any further back in the Duchan, meaning again, if you have a Levi that was singing over there. By the way, we're not.
How do we call Duchan the Afrikanim? Really, it was
It's a good question. I mean, it could be, you know, we do have the Mishnah in Talmud describes that when the Kohenim did Birkas Kohenim, they would stand on the steps of the Ulam. But I think, if I remember correctly, the Rambam learns that they would do Birkas Kohenim two different times during the day. They do one. There would be, I think so, I don't remember for sure, but one was on the steps of the Ulam, as the Mishnah says, but another time was there, during another time, during the day or whatever, they would stand on that Duchan, on that same platform. The Duchan was a platform between the Ezes Kohanim and the Ezes Yisrael.
So the Kohanim would stand
the
there?
The Kohanim would stand there, and
also?
No, the Levim would stand there when they sang and played the instrument. But the Kohenim would stand there at some times for Birkas Kohenim. I guess that's where we get the name Duchen for. Anyway, but here we're talking about Minaduchen Omaila, the Kohenim who sang over there. By the way, whether we're also talking about the ones who played instruments it depends on Machlokes Panoyim. The Machlokes Panoyim and Sefer Erchin, the ones who played the instrument, did they also have to be Levim? In which case they have to be Miyuchasim, or could they even be Yisraelim, but also Miyuchasim, or maybe not, maybe they could even be Avadim. There's an opinion in the mission over there in Erchin that they could even be Avadim. And according to that, then obviously the musicians you can't get. So my time, why is that? Omar, Shasham HaYoyosh from Miyachta Kohen or Miyachta Levia. We learn in a Mishnah in Midah, so actually in a Braisa, that Rashi says there, meaning in the Lishkas HaGazis, the Sanhedrin would sit, and most of their day would be occupied with checking out the yuchsim of the Kohenim and Levi. They had a lot of other things to do as well. When there's a question in halacha that none of the lower Bosidim had been able to answer, then they discussed it also. But on a day-to-day basis, this was what they were busy with. There are Mepharshim who learn that's not who learn differently. There are Mepharshim who learn differently than Rashi. We're not talking about the Sanhedrin and the Lishkas HaGazis. We're talking about there was a special committee that sat in some other room in the Beis Mikdash, whose job it was to be checking over these yurts. Anyway, the point is, and Levim as well, we're saying. So therefore, the point is that no Levi who was possible would wind up on the Jordan. Next, Velo Sanhedrin Lamaile. You don't check
Levi. Levi, you just checking from Azeris.
Right, well, obviously, right. There's nothing to check about halal. V'loim Sanhedrin Lamaila, we said you don't have to check beyond, if this woman has an ancestor who served in the Sanhedrin, you don't have to check his parentage. My timer, Tani Rabbi Yosef, because Rabbi Yosef taught a b'raita, k'shem she-based in Menuchin b'tzedek, just as much as the based in has to be clean as far as righteousness, as far as honesty. They can't take bribes, they can't be partial to one or the other, etc. Kach Menuchin mikom mum, so they have to be clean of every mum. And mum really has a double meaning over here. It means a mum as in a physical blemish, but it also means spiritually as in being mamzer or whatnot. Interesting thing, a famous story about Moshe Feinstein. Late in his life, he had to have a pacemaker implanted, and he was very concerned about it for a while. He had to get into a lot of discussion in halacha about the pros and cons of it because he was concerned it would make him a Baal Mum. And if Mashiach comes in his lifetime, he might be chosen to serve on the Sanhedrin, where he surely would have been qualified. And if he's a Baal Mum, he couldn't. I think
why should he be considered Baal Mum?
Because that's what he was discussing. I think he discussed it. I think he discussed it with his son-in-law, Tendler, the pros and cons, whether it would make him, Moshe Tendler, whether it would make him a Baal Mum. Yeah. Anyway, okay.
A Baal Mum is when you're missing a limb.
Not necessarily. No. The Mishnah in Bechorot lists about 140 conditions, some internal, some external, that can make a person. Okay. I don't know. I mean, but there's also they have to do an incision in the chest, right? Okay.
No, they don't.
Oh, okay. They have to get a pacemaker somehow. Remember, this is. This was in the 70s or 80s. You know, medical technology wasn't necessarily what it is nowadays. Okay. Amar Mirem, in my craw, what's the pasuk that shows us that idea, that basically it has to be menucha mikomum? The pasuk says, kulach yofa rayasi, you are all completely beautiful, my beloved. This is the Abish talking to the Jewish people. Mum ein bach, and there's no mum in you. Gemara says, "Ema mumu mamish." Who says then that it means mumim psulah yichus? Maybe it only means physical blemishes. Amar Abach by Yaakov, because for that you have a different pasuk. Amakra, the yach u'sham imach. The pasuk says that Eved tells Moshe Rabbeinu, take 70 zakenim and then bring them together with you to the oil moed, and that the yach u'sham imach, and they shall stand there together with you. Imach meaning implying b'daimim loch. They should be similar to you. You are a miyuchas. You're not you have no mamzerus or what have you in your lineage. They have to also be the same way. Therefore, fine. Mumin bach can mean they can't have physical mumin. Yes, v'sham imach means they also have to be similar to him in yuchas. Why? Who says that the reason they needed that is because that's the prerequisite for being on the Sanhedrin? Maybe it's because of the prerequisite for Asherah Sashchina. The Pasuk is saying over there, the Eved is telling Moshe, you're finding it too hard to lead the people, so get these 78 Kenim together. I will take some of the spirit of Nebuah that's on you and bestow it on them, and that way they'll be able to help you out with leading the Jewish people. So maybe the reason they need to be Menucha, maybe the reason they need to not be Mamzerim and whatnot, is because of that. Nothing to do with them serving on the Sanhedrin. Omer of Nachman, no. Omer Kra, because we have a different pasuk that tells us that. The pasuk says, when Yisro is advising Moshe to appoint Dayanim to help him, V'hakel me'olata, they should make it easier for you, but not so Itach, and they will bear the burden with you. Again, B'daimim walk, again, Itach means they have to be similar to you. So taken all together, therefore, we can see that they have to be similar to Moshe in both ways. they can't be Baalim Mumin. Moshe wasn't a Baalim Mumin. And they also can't be, they also have to be Kshayri Yid. The Mishnah said, Kol Mishu Muchzik Avosim Mishotri HaRabim, anybody whose ancestors have a Chazakah being among the Shotrim. Now Shotrim, usually when we say Shotrim and Shotrim together, it means like the police, it means the bailiffs, it means the ones who have the job of enforcing the Psak Din. The first one points out, I think it's the Shittalo Noid Lami, I don't remember who it is exactly, points out that here, maybe the Hamakna points out here not, because here we don't have together with the word Shotrim. Therefore, Shotrim, the Gemara is going to assume, has a different meaning. The Gemara is going to assume over here that Shotrim means people who are judging Dinim Mamonet. It also means Dayanim then, but not Dayanim of Dinim Nefashas, like the ones who served on the Sanhedrin, but rather Dayanim of Dinim Mamonet. They can be called in that regard. They can be. Sometimes, for example, we had in Sotra, when we're talking about the announcements that are made before they go off to war, you know, anybody who built a house, anybody who betrothed a wife, etc., the pasuk says, V'dibra shotrim al ha'amim. Well, again, the shotrim over there doesn't mean the bailiffs. It means the leaders. It means the leaders, the generals, whatever. So you're all third command. Okay. Anybody who we said, anybody who has a chazakah that his fathers were among the shotrim ha'rabim is also considered kosher. What do you mean? The members of the Mekmin and Psulim. Are you telling me that Shotrim cannot be appointed from people who are Psula Yichus? What do you mean? I have a contradiction. A Mishnah says in Sanhedrin, I call Kshedim Lodin Dini Mominus. Everybody is kosher to judge cases, to judge financial cases. The Ain are called Kshedim Lodin Dini Nefashis. Not everybody is kosher to judge Dini Nefashis. And we discussed that over there in Sanhedrin. I call Leisu Yamai. What does the word I call come to include? It comes to include that a mamzer can sit on a basin for dinim mamon. You asked me that about the other day, and we looked it up, by the way. Here's the source, right? So a mamzer can be on a basin of dinim mamon. He can be from Shotrei Haradim. That's what we're saying, yeah. No, we did actually. We found in Shulchan Aruch. It said in black letter. It said that. Rabbi Abir Shalayim. Rabbi says yes, but our Mishnah is talking about specifically the Dayanim of Dinim Mamonis who were in Yerushalayim. V'chein Tani Rav Shimon Bar Zera, V'kedushin Devei Levi, so also Rav Shimon Bar Zera taught in Kedushin of Levi, meaning Levi was one of the Talmidim of Levi. He wrote or composed Brises on Masechta Kedushin, sort of like we have the Tesefta, which parallels the Mishnah, it was written by Rochia and Roshia. Levi put together sort of his own Tesefta, his own collection of Brises on Kedushin, it's called Kedushin Debei Levi, also taught that our Mishnah is talking about Yerushalayim. And in Yerushalayim specifically, they would be careful to only appoint Miyuchasim to even for Dinim Amenah. We said the Gaboy Tzedaka Masim, we said anybody whose ancestors were from these Shotrei HaRabim or from Gaboy Tzedaka are allowed to marry their daughters off to Kohanim. There's no problems of Psula Yichus. My timer, why if it's Gaboy Tzedaka? Given the Minsu Bahadi Inshid, because inevitably they're going to get into arguments with people. Domamar, because we learn in a Braisa in Baba Batra. Yeah. Mimashkinim al Tzedaka, Afilub Erev Shabbos. Gaboyim, when the Vada Kohol or whatever, when the community leadership decides that there's a certain amount that needs to be given to Tzedaka, and they assess each household how much they're going to give, the Gaboy Tzedaka is going to take a mashkin. They can force people, if you don't pay, then we're going to take a mashkin from your house until you pay up what you've been assessed. Afilub Erev Shabbos, even on Erev Shabbos, even a person is busy getting ready for Shabbos, they still, if you're assessed for it, you got to pay up. So therefore, inevitably, people end up arguing with them on this. The im isa, the ikka, so if there was any psul yichus, it's like kol, there would be a kol, because eventually, inevitably, people like would then, like we said, on Amud Aleph, we said, no, not the women, the men. We said, that's exactly it. They yell at him, are you talking, your mom's there, that you're coming in, et cetera. As the famous expression goes, if you want to have your family tree traced, run for public office.
Okay.
So, further in this connection, talking about people, what kind of people are allowed to hold community leadership positions, the Gemara tells the case, Rav Adar Bar Abba's landlord, or the person he boarded by, whatever, was a ger. One time he and Rabibi were arguing. One said, I'm going to take the leadership of the city. And the other one said that they were having an election campaign. And each one wants to be elected. Yeah. Also the Kamei, well, not really election, because we're going to see they're going to be appointed. That's what we're going to discuss. Also the Kamei, Rabbi Yosef. They came to Rabbi Yosef to ask which one of us should be appointed. Avalahu. He says, Tanena. Well, we learn in a Braisa. The Pasuk says, Saim Tosim Alacha Melach Mekerabacha. Well, the Pasuk says you should set over yourself a king Mekerabacha. And you learn from that, from the double expression. Saim Tosim means not just a king. Kol Mesim is Shatam Mesim. all leadership positions, all leadership positions that you set up, lo yi elo yi elo mekerav achacha, can only be from among your brothers. So not again. For that purpose, he's not considered mekerav achacha. Yeah. There is an interesting, speaking of Rav Moshe Feinstein, he has a couple of interesting trovas on this topic. What exactly is considered a leadership position for this purpose? For example, he talks about a mashgiach is considered a leadership position because the mashgiach can act against the will of the owner of the place. If he decides the place is not up to kosher standards, he has the right to act independently of the owner. Therefore, that's considered a strata. Therefore, you can't appoint a ger to it. Mashenkin, for example, he says, let's say, to appoint a ger as a Rosh Hashiva or something, he doesn't necessarily act independently. He's still beholden to whoever's above him. That you could. So therefore, Rabbi Yosef is saying, I'm sorry, you're disqualified. Amalet of Adar Ba'ava, however, of Adar Ba'ava, who boarded by him, asks Rabbi Yosef, is that true even if his mother is a Jew? This Ushkizban, when we say he was a Ger, we mean his father was a Ger. His father was a Ger, his mother was a born Jew. He's considered a Ger in the sense that he inherits his father's, to that extent, he inherits his father's Yosef.
Well,
not really, but whatever. Amalei, sort of Yosef tells him, you're right. As a matter of fact, yeah, if his mother is Jewish, then yeah, that can be considered mekerav achacha, and therefore he's just as eligible for the position as Rabbi.
But what's the chiddush? We know that.
We wouldn't know that. It's actually the case of a king. With a case of a king, it's not like that. The case of a king, we learned in Sota about that's the thing. We learned in Sota about Agrippa Samalach that when he was reading he started crying and everybody yelled out Ochinu after, and the Gemara says they got in deep trouble for that. Why? Even though Imam Yisrael, the Rashi brings the possibility over there that Imam Yisrael, because of a king, you need higher standards. But it's saying that doesn't apply to other things.
What happened? They removed him? No, they kept
him. No, they kept him. But the problem wasn't that they kept him. They may not have had a choice. The problem was that they said, Ochinu Ate, okay, you are a brother, you're doing the right thing. The Abishter was very angry at them for the Hanufa, that they flattered him, that they told him wrongly, you're doing the right thing. Anyway. So, the bottom line is, Rabbi Yosef saying, fine, so we have two very eligible candidates over here. Who do we pick? Tilkach, well, therefore, let's split it up. Rabbi de Gabra Rabahu, Rabbi, who was a great person, meaning a Tamad Chacham, La'ayim B'mili D'Shmaya. Let's appoint him. He will be the community leader as far as Ruchni is thinking things. For example, Rashi says he'll be responsible for appointing the Gabari Tzedakah, assessing who has to give X amount of Tzedakah, who gets Aliyah in Shul, who translates, etc., that sort of thing. Umar and the other guy, the son of the Ger, La'ayin B'mili D'Masa, let him be appointed to look after the material affairs of the city. For example, Rashi says, to make sure the city has a guard, to dig wells, to make sure that city gates are kept in good repair, all that sort of thing. Not mechanic, no. It's a difference of, Rabbi will be the spiritual leader, he'll be the Rav. In charge of the ruchniistic matters, and the other guy will be the mayor in charge of the gas. Amar Abaye says you can learn a lesson from this. Tilkach, man de mishri tzurvim rabbanon bosh pezichnei. If somebody has a tamad chacham, tzurvim rabbanon, meaning the young tamad chacham, boarding by him or staying by him in his inn, la ashrei kirav acha ba'ava. You should make sure that his guest or his boarder is somebody like Rav Adar Ba'ava, the yadol mahapach bebispulte, who'll know to be able to point out something in his favor. Because if Rav Adar Ba'ava hadn't known to point out about the Imam Yisrael thing, the guy wouldn't have gotten the job. Further on this topic of appointing gerim to positions, the Gemara says Rav Zera mitapavahu. Rav Zera would take care of them in the sense that he would try to arrange to honor them and give them positions of importance. And actually, the Radal says an interesting thing on that. We learned the other day that Rav Zera had given a drasha that a ger is mutter to marry a mamzeret, and the gerim were very offended by it. So therefore, now to make up for it, he would try to make sure that they. The Meiri has a different explanation of it, though. He says mitapavahu doesn't mean he would appoint them to independent positions of authority. It means metaphor in the sense of like tuffle. Like he'd appoint, let's say, as a mayor or what have you, a born yid, and as a vice mayor or whatever, as an assistant, he'd appoint again. Rabba Barabu metaphor, Rabba Barabu, the same thing, would also take care of them, to try and appoint them. On the other hand, the Ma'arava after the Resh Kuri Le Mukminayu, in the Ma'arava in the West, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, they would not even appoint Gerim as inspectors of measures. Kurim Lashon Kur, like the people whose job it was to go around in the marketplace and make sure that everybody's weights and everything are correct, because it's a position of authority. And they held that a ger can only be appointed. What?
In Babel.
No, in Babel, they held differently than in Eretz Yisrael.
What?
So one possibility is that maybe technically you could, but in Eretz Yisrael they were more machna on it. But in Nahar Jah, they were also machna. Afilu Reish Gargusa, like Mukhmiminayo, they would not even appoint a ger to the position of Reish Gargusa. Reish Gargusa is somebody whose job it is, you have people have to water their fields from local streams or canals and whatnot. You have one person whose job it is to allocate who gets water when, whose turn is it to water the field when, to make sure that the ones who are closer get ahead of the people who are further away as we learn to get in, etc. That's called Reish Gargusa. Again, it's considered a position of authority. What? Again, it's considered a position of authority, and therefore in Nahar Jah they would not appoint Gerim even today. Rabbi Yossi and Achishah, you probably said in the Mishnah that Rabbi Yossi said that also somebody who was enrolled in the Erchi HaYishana Shal Tifori, in the list of there who can be Dayanim or Edim, as the case may be, my time a Daitu and Machatni again, because it's the same idea as we're saying, that such a person can be considered a Miyuchas, because they would be very careful to only allow only Shere Yichud to sign as Edim. According to Rashi's understanding, if they would only sign on these roles, they would only enroll on these roles people who are Shere Yichud to be Dayanim. Rav Chanina ben Antignus, although we said Rav Chanina ben Antignus had said that also somebody who is enrolled in the Istrat Yishal Melech, in the list of soldiers for the king, it means the Chayolis Shal Beis David. We mean specifically in the army of David HaMelech, or maybe not only David HaMelech, maybe of all the descendants of David. Maybe, yeah. I don't know.
But not all the kings.
No, not necessarily the kings in the time of the Bais Shani, yeah. Amr of Yosef, Mikra, where the Rashi specifically says the word Istratia actually means where they would have a rotation of soldiers. They didn't have a standing army where everybody, where certain people are always on duty. Because not conscription either. Well, they had a rotation. Every month, certain people are responsible to serve in the army for that month. And that way, the rest of the year, they could be working in their fields and taking care of their families. Yeah. So that's the Istratia Shamal. And that's Chayol HaShavis David. Amr Rabbi Yosef, Maikra, what's the pasuk that expresses that idea that only Miyuchasim served in David's army? The pasuk says in Divrei Hayamim, V'yisyachsam batzava b'melchama. They're yichus in the army, in the war. So we see that they had to be able to show their yichusin to serve in the army. Okay, but time am I, why only Miyuchasim? Amr Rabbi Yehuda, Amr Rab, Kadesh teis chusin, es chus avoysim, nayat mesayatam. Because you want that their own chus, plus the chus of their ancestors, should help them out in battle. Yeah. Okay, the Gemara asks, what do you mean only Miyuchasim, implying not Gerim? Well, you could Selah Ka'amoni. You find among the list of David's soldiers, there's a man named Selah Ka'amoni. My lab to Osim Amon, does not mean that he came from Amon, that he's a Ger from Amon. No, the answer is Lloyd the Yosef Amon. No, it just means he was a Yid, he was a born Yid, who lived for a period of time in Amon. Again, doesn't mean he came from the Chizim. No, the Yosef Chiz, no, it means he lived among the Chizim. Which not everybody agrees to that, by the way. That one of the Farshim, I think maybe Marsha, brings from a Medrash that says that actually Uri Achiti was a Ger.
Where did they live?
The Chittim primarily lived, they found that primarily they lived in Turkey. But there were groups of them who also lived in Syria and Israel, in Hebron, for example, right? Abraham brought Moses Machpelah from Ephraim Achiti.
How did they get there?
it's all connected by land, they can move around. Hey, Itay Hagiti, what about though? We find among David's soldiers, you find a guy named Itay Hagiti, the Chitem Ahochinamid Yosef Agast. Okay, you're going to argue the same thing. It means he was a Yid who lived in Gast among the Plishtim. Can't he? But Omer of Nachman, Itay Hagiti, Bo Bitla. What we find, the Gemara tells us in Nebuchadnezzar, based on a pasuk in Shmuel Beis, that at one point when they conquered Ammon, they captured a crown that had been on the head of their local Nebuchadnezzar called Malchim. Milkoim, whatever. They took that crown and brought it to David and it became his royal crown. Now, how can they do that if it was an Amon of Adizara? You have to be Mavakalot. Now, the din is only a goy can be Mavakalot. You can be Mavakalot by having a goy declare that it's no longer an object of Adizara. But only a goy can do that. A yid cannot. And the Gemara says there, in Rav Nachman says there in Avodah Zarah, that Itay Hagiti came and did that. So obviously, Itay Hagiti had to at one point be a goy. Therefore, he's a ger. So what's he doing serving in David's army?
Can a ger do that?
Yeah, well, not once he becomes a ger. Once before, he was a goy. Yeah, originally, Itay Hagiti was a goy. Later on, maybe he became a ger. Fine, but meanwhile, while he was a goy, yeah. Okay. Yeah. And not only that, I can prove to you that there's also other goyim in David's army, or goyim or gerim, as the case may be. Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, Arameis Yeladim Hayolei LeDavid. David had 400 young men. Doesn't mean Rashi says they were his own children. It means that he had them working for him. But there are Rishonim who say they were actually his, but whatever. All of them were the children of a Yifas Torah, which we learned earlier in the Masechta. We had Machlokas, Rashi, and Tosfos, whether you're allowed to have relations with a Yifas Torah one time before she's Nisgayer. If we say they do, Tosfos says you are allowed to, then these children were conceived when their mother was a Goita, therefore they're considered Goyim. According to Rashi, that you can only do it afterwards, you would have a bit of a hard time explaining our Gemara over here, because the Gemara is going to say they dress like Goyim, but okay. Anyway. All of them would cut their hair in front, the way the goyim do. And they would all let the back of their hair grow long, again, to in goyish style. They all sat in golden chariots. They would go at the heads of the army when David's army would go out to war. And they are the powerful people of David's army. So they're going, and then they're still serving in his army. The answer is the Azilah of Usi'ama. They didn't actually go to fight. They just went in order to terrify the goyim, which Ben Yahyadeh and Sanhedrin, with its mother, has also brought explained, because every time the goyim saw them, they'd remember, you know what, the Jews beat us last time, and they took wives from us as Yifayis Toyah. So therefore, that itself, psychologically, would frighten them. But they didn't actually fight, is the point, yeah. So you can still say that David only had Miuchasim in his army. As far as Itai Agiti, by the way, it does mention the Pasuk that he commanded at one point during the war with Avshalom, he commanded one of the divisions of David's army. One of the Mepharshim talk about either maybe it means it was a one-time thing, they had no choice, they didn't have anybody else capable, or maybe also it means that he just led the army into an actual fight. One last thing about these 400 guys. Rav Reuven Margoliath says an interesting thing about it. He says it may not have been 400. It may have been that in the original manuscript of the Gemara, maybe it said Tuf, with Tik, standing for the word Tisha, meaning nine, but they accidentally thought that Tuf means 400. Why nine? As he says, because it's possible in Divrei Hayamim, when it lists all of David's children, it mentions the children he had from his various wives, then it mentions nine children without saying who their mother was. Maybe those are the children that we're talking about over here. An interesting fact.
When did you, what was that?
Reuven Margoliath says that based on a passage in Divrei Hayamim.